Hello.
Hi,
Guy. How are you?
Good evening.
All right, how are you?
Good.
Central position.
Yeah, sort all the cameras out. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
No probs.
There's normally more of us, but for various reasons, it's just me and H tonight. So stuck with a gin.
Let's be honest. One of our pals is enjoying Cheltenham a little bit too much, so we told him.
Oh, good on him.
Yeah, he's probably best just staying clear of us this evening. And the other one's got childcare duty, so it's all important stuff.
Oh, good on him. I've had a treble on the first two races, the last 2 days, first three races. And the first two have come in and the third one's let me down both times. Today was a little bit sickening because there was a clear second coming in on the third race, which would have paid all right, but he fell at the last. Oh.
Shame. I've been talking to a lot of friends who have been putting bets on months ago.
Yeah.
Because I think there was one today, Monkfish or something. It was 4-1.
Yeah,
to one
Art was always going to win.
Yeah, he got it at 7-1 3 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're forward thinking, if you know the sport, it's like anything else, isn't it? If you know the sport, you'll be well away. I haven't done it for a while, but in fact, I haven't done it all season, but I'm just a regularly put just three results Premier League. Saturday, 3 o'clock, three results.
Yeah.
I only ever got two. I could never get three. Just results. Home, win or draw. Home, away or draw. I could never get three. The Premier League's the hardest thing to bet on.
Well, we've probably got a bit of a confession on that later on because we're doing a charity. We're struggling, put it that way.
Well, yeah, it's hard.
Hi, I'm Christian.
Hi, I'm Jim.
Hi, I'm Dan.
Hi, I'm Hank.
And this is the Football Musketeers.
Okay, all right. We've had lots of debate recently, so we wanted to get your views on a few things. So the first thing that we're all extremely nervous about is how do we think we're going to get on in the group stages of, well, hopefully there'll be more than the group stages, but against Croatia, Scotland and Czech Republic. How well do you think we'll do? I've said that we'll get 4 points out of that group, and I think I'm getting sceptical because I'm getting older, but what's your thoughts on those three games?
I think England will go through. I think they'll get 6 or 7 points. As the tournament, this happens for me for every single tournament, as we get nearer, my confidence saps and saps and saps and saps. I'm the opposite to the rest of the country. The rest of the country seems to get carried away on a bit of a wave. I tend to start thinking on the dark side, and then all of a sudden on the eve of the first game, I suddenly think, we're going to win it. We're going to win it. We're going to win the whole thing. And then it all crashes around me, obviously. So I'm quite optimistic at the moment. I've been having a look with internationals coming up. I've been having a look at the players available and the players that we might pick as a 23 for the summer. And it looks good. It looks good until you remember the last sort of performances and matches, which, you know, tended to be pretty dull. And I don't know. Let's see how the next few games go. Let's say a World Cup qualifying begins. And when you look at the names, I know we've been here. I should know better. I'm 49 years old. I should know better. But when you look at the names, and, you know, I don't just cover England. I cover the whole of European football, world football in a World Cup year. And, you know, I've been researching a few of the other squads and I look at our squad and I think, you know what? No, this should be good enough to be, well, it's minimum quarterfinal team, and it's to be honest, I think the semi-finals has to be the minimum aim. It has to be.
It should be, shouldn't it? For me, I look at big like FA Cup games, even Sunderland against Tranmere at the weekend. Mm. When it comes to a big prize or a big one-off game, I just find that we put so much pressure on ourselves that some of these players just, they turn into a different type of player than what we're used to seeing. So I'm hoping that's not going to continue.
It's been the case forever. And I don't know, I've had this conversation so many times leading up to tournaments, and I sort of think, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? I think it's a good thing, actually, that the media gets really behind and whips everybody up and we really get into it, because it brings the tournament alive. And okay, the disappointments are greater. But one day, touching wood and everything, one day it will happen that England will win something, and then it'll be even better than ever because the way it's been done. And
yeah,
it's better that than being a bit indifferent all the time. I'd rather have the ups and downs than being a bit meh. So yeah. I like it the way it is. As I say, I veer wildly from being massively optimistic to not got a chance. I mean, I don't think I've ever been as low after a football match ever in my life as in Nice after the Iceland game in the last Euros. That was such... Oh, this is... I've seen it from fans sometimes that say the media, you know, they're all anti-England and they'll be delighted when they're out and all that. You know what? No. In that media centre, and I class, you know, we all cover England, and okay, some do it differently to others, but fundamentally, our lives are better, our chances of success in our professions are better if the teams that you're covering are doing well.
Yeah.
You know, especially when it's England, when you've got a whole sort of country behind you, and I will include the other home nations in that, although I don't cover them quite so much. But
yeah.
You know, I genuinely do want Scotland and both the islands and Wales to do well. I genuinely do. I know it's not reciprocated, but there you go. And yeah, the whole of the media centre, all of the England press pack were absolutely just deflated and sick of that. That's why possibly it was a bit venomous towards Roy and Gary Neville and everybody else involved at the time. But because I think there was a feeling that in that tournament that they might have done something. You know, you ended up with a pretty bog average Portugal team winning it in the end. It wasn't great.
It was a good chance, wasn't it?
It was, but they blew it. They absolutely blew it. And I've got to be honest, it was horrible. That was horrible. That's the lowest I've ever felt after a football match. Poor me. There I was in the south of France. Oh, dear.
Well, you probably don't know, but Christian and I are Gillingham fans, so we've had the worst experience ever when we played Manchester City.
Well, yes, I remember that game very well.
So that's the only time I've cried at a football game. And I must admit,
I can get that. I get that. So for you, is there? I mean, I've had this with other Man City fans in the past. What's the most important goal? Was it the Aguero goal, or was it the Dickoff goal, or was it even the Yaya Toure goal in the cup final? And I think most City fans of any age would say the Dickoff goal is the most important in their history.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable that he was our goalkeeper's best man at his wedding as well.
It's a fantastic story, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. 22 years later, you can get over it, can't you?
See it on Sky being played again. I have to watch it, but I sit there and my stomach's turning watching it. And when Weaver goes off running, I'm like, oh, no, I can just remember. And as soon as he got to penalties, I knew it was over because we had a load of players that had two.
Because of the way it went.
Yeah, we just didn't have a chance.
I had the misfortune of going to Manchester. That's not a misfortune, but going to the Etihad Stadium for a tour. And my partner's a Millwall fan, and she made it very, very, very clear to the tour guide that I was a Jules fan. So for the whole tour, everyone was basically ripping into me the entire tour. So it was absolutely beautiful.
It's all part of it, isn't it? It really is. Yeah. It's what makes it great. It's what we've all missed, actually, over the last year.
Indeed. Yeah. Just finishing off then on the England Euros point, we've had a lot of debate on who should be starting, if one has to start, out of Foden and Grealish. So we'd be just interested to see what your thoughts are and which one you'd go with.
But I'm fresh from watching another Man City masterclass against Borussia Mönchengladbach last night. I commentated on that for the world feed, the overseas audience.
Yeah.
And Phil Foden, once again, was the best player on the pitch. On a pitch full of talent and experienced players who've seen and done it all. And this kid, the youngest player basically on the field, was magnificent. And I would go him. By the way, I'm a massive Jack Grealish fan. There's a place for both of them in the squad all day long. But I would go with Phil Foden. I just think the energy that he brings for a start, I think he's undroppable for City right now. Couldn't argue with Pep Guardiola, of course, because his rotation seems to be better than anybody else and he gets the best out of them all. But right now, I think he's probably their key player. Then the whole tempo changes with him on the field. And I think the same would go for England as well. I'm going to do it because we've all done it. He is the best talent since Gascoigne. He is in English football because he's a little bit different because of the energy and the buzz. I know he's been sent off once in the Champions League as well, but he seems to have a really, really good temperament about him as well. Yeah. Look at the way he rode the challenge against Southampton a week ago when he was fouled. It should have been a penalty. And it wasn't even a thought in his mind. Wasn't even a thought in his mind. And even when he kept his feet and kept it going, he didn't rush to the referee afterwards. Just got on with it. He's just a footballer, isn't he? That's it.
Yeah. Do you know, sometimes I think he's like the English David Silva. There's a little bit of that about.
Well, that's who he's learned from. That's exactly who he's had to wait to go to get his place, hasn't he? And I'm very excited about seeing his development. I just hope I'm doing it. Actually, I'm guilty, so I apologise now. Because I was just about to say, I hope we don't build him up for a massive fall. And what am I doing? But it's only purely excitement because of what a talent he is.
So obviously, you've been working during this whole period, the year of, you know, what's been going on with COVID and that. How has that affected the day to day for you? And is it a lot different with obviously empty stadiums and everything?
Yeah, it's not affected the day to day work, the preparation. No. I mean, most of the time I'm in this office at home and I'm doing the same thing. I'm doing the same prep. It doesn't change. There's actually a few more games to do and it's a bit more staggered and your diary's a little bit different because you haven't got five or six on a Saturday and then a couple Sunday, one Monday. It's all, as you know, all over the place. So that's been a little bit different. The Thursdays took a bit of getting used to. Not used to doing games on a Thursday when it's not a European week. So Premier League game at 6 o'clock on a Thursday, that was a little bit odd. But, you know, it's not a big problem, is it? And that's been the same. And that actually has been my lifesaver during all this. It's been absolutely brilliant that I could carry on, and I'm so grateful for that opportunity. The games, a little bit like my supporting of England, I've gone up and down with the games. I started off so excited. I watched every bit of Bundesliga going when they came back before us. I was a big FC Cologne fan. Put the curse on them, they're crap. it's my fault every time. I got very excited about it. It was just so good to finish off the end of the season. Wembley was a bit weird when I went for the FA Cup semi-finals when they were played, and then the final itself. That was the strangest place I've been to be empty. That just did not feel right at all. The others you've kind of got used to over time, but you don't want to get used to it. And then I had a dip, and I thought, this is awful. I'm on a bit of a dip at the moment, actually, although I'm building up to the end of the season, the excitement. At the moment, when I get to a game, I just think, oh, please let this end. I want supporters back. This is just, it feels, I mean, last night's game, I did that from a studio last night. I wasn't in Hungary, obviously. But last night's game in the massive Puskás Arena in Budapest, and I didn't have, for every game that we go to when we're doing Match of the Day, and we're obviously in the stadium, we do get a feed of the EA effects that everybody's, you can choose not to or choose to have them or not. Now, as a commentator, I think personally, I know each to their own, but it's essential to have them, to give yourself something to fight against, to give a sense of occasion, because otherwise, like last night, I didn't have them in my ear and it was a training match. It just felt like a training match. I know it was one-sided anyway, which didn't help, but it just felt like a training game, and that's the danger. I've seen a few games like that over the last year. You can still get a very good one in amongst it all, but you know, occasionally I'll take an ear out of the headphones and just listen to hear the players and the coaching staff shout and what have you. And it's interesting for a while, but then, it's not.
I'll tell you what, if you've got Evans sitting in your...
I can imagine,
I mean, it's unbelievable. They're constantly on iFollow having to apologise for him.
You see, about the whole I'll let you into a little trade secret there, and I will fall foul of this at some point, but I've got a little bit of a thing that I will refuse to apologise for language because I can't stand it. I know it's essential and it's not the commentator doing it, it's the director under orders from above. You have to apologise. I think, who is watching this who is offended by hearing that? Who on earth is watching football and going, oh, my ears? Oh, no, you know, who is doing that? Why are we apologising to them? Go and watch something else. I don't care.
Exactly.
But, I try not to, and I try and avoid it like the plague. And I've had it a couple of times where the director said it, and I've kind of just ignored it until it's gone away. And then I get a bit of a bollocking at half time. I've set myself up now, Leicester Man United on Sunday, live BBC One FA Cup. Guaranteed I'm going to have to do it.
We're listening out for it.
We're going to be listening.
And it's Sunday, isn't it, as well? It's Sunday. It's Songs of Praise Day. That might be a caveat. Do apologise if you've heard anything that you shouldn't, but you're going to. Maybe something like that.
Cover all bases.
It's a shame we can't.
Turn off now, put country file on. Oh, I just swore.
Now we're going to get a bit more personal near to home now with regards to York. Right, so I need to ask you a couple of questions about York City because I need to know. I mentioned the name to the lads today. And I don't know if you get to the games where you used to, but does the name Rodney Rowe ring any bells to you?
Yes, absolutely. He's one of my Facebook friends, is Rodders.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember a particular epic night out in York with the team of that era with Rodney? I think somebody ended up in a bin that night. Great guy. Really good guy.
Yeah, I remember him because I think he did turn out for Jules a few times.
And
we've currently got a striker that is a bit of a journeyman that I think you had in Verdane Oliver. And
who's doing well for you.
Unbelievable. So I'm watching.
Kick a ball for us.
Yeah, I'm not sure he can still kick a ball. I mean, there's a stat on him. I think he's won almost 200 headers, more than any other player in the league.
Well, you've done something with him.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't be bothered when he was at York. Well, that's how it looked. To be honest, when he was at York, I think we could tell he had a bit of quality, but that team was not getting quality out of anybody. It was on a one-way spiral down, so he was just maybe unlucky, wrong timing. At Gillingham, you also had a York City legend, the Geordie Pelle. You had Alan Poulton.
Alan Poulton. He was
now, quite there a is a player. He had skills, did Pouts.
I remember.
I used to love him.
Yeah, he was... He was like one of your trusty players. You knew that he would do the right thing and he was good on the ball. Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, I mean, we've had
players like...
He had skills. He had so many brains in his feet that he didn't have in his head. It was untrue. Great lad. I met my missus on a night out with Alan Poulton. There you go.
Note of that. Okay, just a couple more from me because I'm being a bit greedy.
You are.
Do you have a Premier League team that you have a soft spot for? Because I've just become a Leicester fan now.
I do. I do from childhood, and those who know me will know it. But I'm not going to say it because there's no point. Because it doesn't actually. I know in this day and age, all the commentators and pundits are sort of encouraged to.
Yeah.
Well, I do. I've been a York fan since I was first game at 7 years old. In fact, somebody sent me this the other day, my birthday. How good is this? This is the programme for a game that I attended on my 8th birthday as a treat. And it's a convoluted story. My mate's wife's dad, he's my best mate, and his wife's dad knew I was a York fan and knew from reading about various bits about me that I'd been at this game. And he found on eBay the programme from the game.
Amazing.
And he actually got it. He got the autograph of the manager at the time as well, Charlie Wright.
Wow.
There we go. I don't know how much it cost him on eBay, but he sent it to me and it was, it's great. So, anyway, that's just an aside. Just had that the other day, which is very nice. No, so, I've been a York fan all my life. I did grow up with a big team as well, because most people in York do. Because we're never going to threaten second division for 2 years in the 70s, just before I was about four or five then, so I was too young to go. But, I don't remember those days, but that was the Y front kit you might have seen over the years. And that's the highest we've ever been. So, yeah, I do have a big team, but I don't see the point, because then it just makes people think that you're biased when you're not. Because nobody who gets the sort of position that I'm in, nobody of all my colleagues, they all support teams. Obviously, they do. They've grown up massive football fans. It doesn't affect their commentary. It's a bit like referees. In no shape or form do they have that allegiance. And if people then start listening out for it, I know. No, you don't know. You're listening for something that's not there. And I say this about the bias for a lot. I had it the other day, actually, about 2 years ago. In my local pub, there's a guy who drinks there. He's a West Ham fan. And he said, yeah, can I have a word? Why do you hate West Ham? I said, I don't hate West Ham. I don't hate any team that I cover. I'm just doing my job. And he goes, no, I've heard it in your voice. And when you... I said, no, can I just explain how bias works? You're a fan. That's fine. You hear things in a different way.
Yeah.
If you hear something, you'll think it's an attack. I'm the same. I'll think that you're having a go at my club, because we all do. We think, I can have a go at my club, but you can't. We all think like that. And that's why you think the commentary or the refereeing is biased. It's not. It never will be. Not at that level. Local radio, yes. Because you meant to.
Yeah. We're just.
And that's why, I mean, you probably see behind me, I've got, if they ever get back to the Premier League, yeah, I do have a Premier League team in Sunderland. Because for 5 years of my life, I worked for Metro Radio up there, and I went to training twice a week and covered every single game they played, home and away. And there were the Peter Reid days of going up, going down, brilliant. Niall Quinn, Kevin Phillips, all that. So,
great,
that's my... I didn't grow up a Sunderland supporter, but 5 years of my life, and they were the best working years of my life. They were the years that I got on and managed to sort of do something decent. And if I then walked away and didn't have any soft spot for that club, I wouldn't be much of a football fan. Yeah, I really wouldn't.
That's fair enough.
So I do obviously have a massive soft spot for Sunderland. I was absolutely delighted at the weekend when they won at Wembley finally.
Yeah, they're doing all right. We've had quite a good few set of results against Sunderland, actually. I don't know how.
No, it's a long way, isn't it?
Yeah, I actually watched recently a podcast you were on before, Guy, and you were showing off some of the preparation that you'd done. I think it was like four screens worth of preparation for each of the games. How does that ever feel like work? Or I think you mentioned it before, it was like a hobby. So
occasionally, but not really, because every game's new. So every game's a new project. I'm on a bit of a run of Man United games at the moment, so it's a little bit easier because I'm just updating game by game, but it's also not as interesting. So, I mean, today, for example, I had a little bit of time this afternoon. I'm pretty much all prepped for the Milan game and the Leicester game. So I started looking at the internationals coming up, and I've just did a bit of prep for the Euros on the Russia national team. They announced their squad for the next few internationals, so I've just updated a bit of that. So I was just going through their squad list and their players and having a look at a few things, and that was interesting. That was good. Bit of Lithuania tomorrow, I think I'm going to get my head around. And that becomes interesting. And like when you do the FA Cup, when I was doing Marine against Tottenham, for example, in the third round, you know, digging up on the Marine players and watching a bit of that stuff, that was great. Really enjoyed that. So it's always something new. It's like revising for an exam every week. But then the subject refreshes every now and again.
Yeah.
And it makes it... And we all do too much prep, but you've got to do it, because if you don't... One of my editors once said that we all do too much, et cetera, et cetera, and you should free some time to do other... We could get you doing other things. And I said, well, we can't, because I've got two games at a weekend. I've got to prep for them. And he's going, no, you could do it without any prep. I said, I could, yeah. Yeah. And you probably wouldn't notice. You're right, you wouldn't notice. But if that then followed on for the next week, over time, you would soon notice.
Yeah.
If you constantly do it. I have a ritual on a... After every round of games, usually on a Monday morning, but that's changed now with them all over the show. I update for every Premier League team and a few other select teams. I do all my own stats, keep just appearances and goals. And I do them all myself. And I find that the process of doing them is quite therapeutic. Sometimes it gets to be a bit of a pain, but it's quite therapeutic. And just by doing them, updating on a spreadsheet, the squad number goes in, the facts go in, and you're already one step ahead when you start to prep a game involving those players. So it's like painting the fourth bridge, the old analogy, but it never actually ends. The job never actually ends. But by the same token, it doesn't feel like a job either. Yeah. So it is a hobby, if you like. Very lucky to have a hobby that I get paid for.
I find some of me and my friends are almost addicted to stats. So we've done a lot of quizzes and maybe some drinking games around, you say a player, how many caps and goals for England? And we've done a lot.
You're probably better at it than me then.
Well, we've done, last week we did a fantastic, we did a little game on here, didn't we? And you basically got clues and you had to guess who the player was.
And
we did it with the 442 editor, and I had John Barnes. And I think I said two or three clues, bang, got it straight away. And then last week, how many clues? It was two clues. One of our guys got...
I'm not talking Richards. About it.
Yeah, it was Christian's game. Two clues. I think it was something like he's Turkish and he was born in London. And that was it, bang, got it straight away.
What is it?
It was Kazim Richards, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Straight away, like that.
I tell you what, I'm right with those, though. I think I'd have been right with those clues, wouldn't I?
You probably wouldn't have been wrong. Yeah.
Muzzy as it would have worked as well, I think. Yeah.
On the back of you saying about practicing, quite curious, is a bit of a weird one, but is there a footballer's name that you have had to practice the most in saying?
In what sense? Just pronunciation or?
Yeah.
I'm not. A lot of my colleagues, each to their own, they get the knickers and the twist over pronunciation. I'm not as, it's wrong to say not bothered. Of course I'm bothered. You want to get it right. But I tend to have a rule of thumb, and it's just purely for my own sanity and to make things easier really as well. And you anglicize. We're commentating in the English language, so I anglicize, and by that, I'll get as close to saying it as they say it, but saying it in English, because there are certain sounds that we don't have in English, and if you start throwing those sounds in, you're suddenly speaking a different language in an English sentence, which is muddled anyway. There's a few examples. I mean, Dirk Kuyt was one. Dirk Kuyt, actually, how he said his own name when he was speaking Dutch was unpronounceable. In the middle of a commentary, if I'm saying, you know, if Steven Gerrard gives the ball to Dirk Kuyt, what the heck? And that was basically it. So we all do anglicise, but some people cherry pick what they do and what they don't. I try and tend to anglicise most things. I will never say, for example, the Spanish the, because we don't have that sound. We have the TH sound, but it's a different sound. So I would never say, the one I think of is for Valencia. You hear people saying Valencia. Actually, I think in the tongue of that area of Spain, I think it should actually be Valencia. But anyway, it's we don't say München, do we? We say Bayern Munich. We don't say FC Bayern München. We don't say that. So I tend to sort of anglicize because English. And there's a lesson from that from Sunderland. I remember Sunderland had a French fella in the midfield. He played a starring role when they beat Chelsea 4-1 once. Eric Roy, he became a commentator on French TV. Eric Roy, or Eric Roy. And I can remember hearing the phone in on Metro Radio when he played, and they were talking about Eric Roy. And the commentator had said, it wasn't me at the time, I'd gone by then, but he'd said about Eric Roy had this, and he goes, and it was this old fella from Sunderland rung in and just said, just want to praise the French lad in midfield. What a great game he had. The French lad. He went, Eric, why? Yeah, and the way you're saying his name, it's Eric fucking Roy, man. I thought, who are we talking to when we're broadcasting? You know, don't be all, unless you speak that language perfectly, you're probably not going to get it right anyway. So be respectful. You know, we've got an example at the moment in the Premier League. We get a video at the start of the season. The Premier League distributes it around the press, and basically Sky use it a little bit sometimes. It's a fellow will come up, the player will come up to the screen and say their name. They'll just repeat their name two or three times into the screen. And the lad at Sheffield United, Sander Berger, who we all called Sander Berger last season, walks up at the start of this season and says Sander Berge, which caused great consternation. Oh, Berge, it's Berge. I didn't think it was Berge. It got to the point where one of my colleagues actually got in touch with the Norwegian embassy and said, how would you say this name? So it's Berger. And anecdotally, I don't know if anybody's actually asked him direct, but anecdotally, basically, he was taking a piss. It was just all a huge game. I'm going to say my name differently so they all get it wrong. So to be honest, if you're doing that, who cares what we call you then in that case? Free for all. As long as it's the right player you're talking about and you're not sounding like an idiot,
yeah,
you know. Sorry, Christian, I've rattled on here, but to go back to your original point about there are players' names I have mental blocks with. I can't think of one off the top of my head right now, but as I get older and the brain gets a bit slower, it's getting a bit worse as well. There are players that I suddenly will just, I'll add an S onto the end of their surname or something, or just completely there are two, I can't remember off the top of my head now, but there's two players in particular I keep transposing. And that's just the brain. It doesn't mean I don't know who they are. You know, as soon as I do it, the next game, somebody's like, he doesn't know who it is. Of course I do, but it's just this, I've got one mental block in my brain that is, I'm getting two players the wrong way around. It happens.
I think it's an age thing. I've found myself starting doing similar things at work. So I work for a bank, and you talk to so many different people, and I've started forgetting names and adding S's and bits on people's names.
That's the other thing as well, by the way. There's so many names that you have to remember for every game. You know, I'm doing five games a week at the moment, so there's so many names, and I've got to remember what they look like and how they play football as well, and what number they wear, and a little bit of history about them. So then I'm finding that in everyday life, people that I see regularly, be it down the pub or in the shop or whatever, you know, in the village where I live, say, oh, morning guy, you're all right, and I'll be thinking, I know you, but I haven't got a clue what your name is. I'm forgetting names that I see every day because I've got that many more names in my head.
Yeah, understood. I'm just interested to see quickly as well what you think about the form of, and I'll try and pronounce his name, Haaland, the striker at Dortmund, because we've been talking about him. And I didn't realise how big he was and powerful, but at the moment, you know, we've been discussing if someone can get hold of him in the Premier League, that, you know, if one of the top three or four teams get hold of him, they've got so much a better chance to win the league. And if Man City get hold of him, is that the end of it for two or three years?
Well, discussion I was having with Andy Townsend on the game last night, we were talking about where he's most likely to, the game was dead, so we were talking about all sorts of things. And then, his likely destination. And I suppose City would seem to be, with their resources, et cetera, and the fact that his dad played for them, that's got to be a selling point, I would think. They would seem to be the favourites. Now, will he come? Will he come to City? Does City have a plan to play with a centre-forward in the future? Because they haven't done this season for large parts of it. Yeah. Are they going to play with what you call a genuine number nine or not? Might that come into his thinking? Might it just be that Guardiola's waiting for the chance to have him before he changes style every year anyway? He'll probably find a whole new way of playing football next year. So, United could move heaven and earth. I don't know. Chelsea could move heaven and earth. There's only say three or four clubs could get him anyway.
Yeah, he just thought,
So is it a shoe in Al Lewandowski and all the others? Is he just going to go to Bayern Munich? Yeah, are they going to? Yeah,
there's always that thought, isn't there? And then you know Barcelona and Real Madrid, if they really want someone, do they just automatically then if they
without a doubt, him and Mbappe are the most sought after talents on the planet right now. There's no doubt about it, and with justification too.
Yeah, the stats are unbelievable, aren't they?
He's such a. I really like watching Haaland because I don't think we've properly seen his like for a little while. The good proper centre forward has seemed to be a dying thing. But I suppose Harry Kane's the last to come through. Although I think there's a little bit more to Harry Kane than that. He's evolved his game this year, actually. Anyway, hasn't he? So it'd be great to see him in the Premier League. But it's not bad seeing him in the Bundesliga. It's not as if we don't get to see these players, is it? In the old days, Gerd Müller. Our dads and granddads never got really to see Gerd Müller unless they lived in Germany, whereas now we see these players all the time.
Yeah. So what we've done, guys, unfortunately, a few years ago, I lost my sister, and we're trying to, very, very desperately, trying to make a little bit of money for a charity. And unfortunately, the other three guys have let me down almost 4 weeks.
Oh, don't put the pressure on.
So we're just doing a little bet, and if we can raise a bit of cash off the back of it, then we're going to do different charities each time. So I've gone this week for Watford. I can't believe they've managed to keep hold of some of their players, and I think they're in some good form. I do worry.
I'm going to have to look at the fixtures, by the way. I'm not sure who's got who.
So Watford have got Birmingham. So I don't think Bowie is going to do too much. I know there's sometimes the bounce back of a new manager, but... I think some of Watford's players are just incredibly strong. So I'm going to go with Watford this week. So, Christian, do you want to let us know who you've gone with and the other guys have gone with, and then we can let Guy just give us his team?
So, yeah, Dan has gone for Fleetwood to beat Swindon. Jim has gone for Mansfield.
I don't know if they're playing, but they'll win.
So we got Watford, Fleetwood, Mansfield.
And then I'm going to go for Sunderland to beat Lincoln. This is without knowing Guy, but basically on the back of Lincoln last night, I don't want him to win another game. So, sorted.
And then,
I'll keep it to what I watch all the time, which is obviously the Premier League mainly. And it's a bit of a punt. I mentioned it earlier. I'm going to go for Brighton to beat Newcastle. And it's not exactly a... I know it's a home win, so it's not going to boost the odds massively, but I don't know... And the more I say it, the more I think, I'll stick with it. Okay. I'll go for Brighton to beat Newcastle.
Cool. Perfect. So do we know what odds we've got then, Christian?
Yeah, we have got 12.5 to 1. So returns £135.
Excellent.
Well,
are you in deficit or are you making a little bit at the moment?
We haven't made anything yet, Guy, unfortunately.
Oh, goodness me.
No, in fact, anything that one of us touches sometimes goes the complete opposite way. So we'll get one. We will get one. So keep your fingers crossed.
Well, hopefully.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Guy. I know that you've been on the cliff with us all the time. It's been really, really interesting listening to some of the stuff you've shared with us, and we really do appreciate it. And I'll make a note of your 6 or 7 points. If we don't get those, I'll definitely be in touch when the Euros start, because... I can't bear losing against Scotland. As long as we don't lose against Scotland.
We'll be all right with that one. I think that's the one that will get three. Point in the first game, win the next two.
Fingers crossed.
That's the way I've got it working out. I think I'm doing the first two. I'm not sure about the third one. I know the third one's live on ITV. I'm not sure. I might be somewhere else. I'm not sure I can do the third one if there are highlights. But I did the first one's live BBC Croatia. The second one is live on ITV, but I'm not missing that one. So sod it. I'm definitely doing it. Yes. I don't care if I miss two live games. I want to do the England-Scotland game. Simple as.
100%. Yeah, great. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, have a good evening. Thanks, Guy.
Cheers. No, thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
All the best. Cheers.
Thank you.